Member-supported Jazz 90.1 proudly welcomes you to America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites. Call the show now at 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll-free 800-790-0415 or soundbites.org. Now, alongside Steve Ray and Dave Enright, here's Nick Francesco on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Good afternoon, Mr. and Mrs. American, all the chips in D.C. It is Saturday, the 25th of January, Anno Domini 2014. And you, you lucky people, you're listening to Soundbites. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 5 minutes after the hour, we're going to be bringing you news, views, things to choose, nothing to lose. Kick off your shoes. Don't get the blues. But here's some news. We're not going to be doing any of that, apparently, on Hangouts on Air. Since one of the scripts refuses to run. So I don't know what that's about. Anyway.
I'm still trying to get the Ustream to launch because my computer had shut itself down for some reason.
I don't know what that's about either.
This technology conspires to get us.
This is not just our first news story, but my favorite news story in a very, very long time. The internet is a gift from God that facilitates communication, Pope Francis said in a statement released Thursday. But he warns that the obsessive desire to stay connected can actually isolate people from their friends and family. Francis made the observations in a message about Catholic Church communications, meditating on the marvels and perils of the digital era and what that means for the faithful going out into the world and interacting with people of different faiths and backgrounds. In comments that will likely rile the more conservative wing of the church, Francis suggested that in engaging in that dialogue, Catholics shouldn't be arrogant in insisting that they alone possess the truth. To have a dialogue means to believe that the other has something worthwhile to say and to entertain his or her point of view and perspective, Francis wrote. Engaging in dialogue does not mean renouncing our own ideas and traditions, but the pretense that they are alone valid and absolute. According to the church's teaching instilled by then Cardinal Joseph Ratzinger, Catholic Church holds the fullness of the means of salvation, a message that has long been taken to mean that only Catholics can find salvation. Church teaching also holds that those who don't know about Jesus but seek God can also attain eternal salvation. Pope Benedict XVI, who was Cardinal Joseph Ratzinger, or Joey Rats as we used to call him, was a strong proponent of engaging in a religious dialogue, but Francis has offered a softer approach in his sermons and gestures. In one famous off-the-cuff homily, he even suggested that even atheists can find salvation. He also riled some conservatives when he washed the feet of two Muslims during the Holy Thursday reenactment of Christ washing the feet of his apostles. Archbishop Claudio Mario Kelly, or Celli if you prefer, the head of the Vatican Social Communications Office, said he didn't think Francis was making an effort, an official policy statement on interreligious dialogue, noting that the message was merely a reflection, not a conciliar or dogmatic text. Certainly he was not speaking ex cathedra, so it doesn't count. Anyway, our poll of the week at soundbites.org, that's bites with a Y, Francis would like us to remind you, is Pope Francis says the internet is a gift from God for dialogue. And your choices are, I love this guy. He's got a point, except on Facebook. Has he seen the comments on YouTube? And pretty sure that's not in the Bible. So far, the winner is pretty sure that's not in the Bible, followed by I love this guy. Now, I know you'll have more to say, and hopefully keep it civil. A dialogue that is civil. And so go to our forums, and you'll find them on the right-hand side of the page, about halfway down, under Fascinating Stuff. And our forum is the poll discussion forum, and look for 25 Jan 14. Pope Francis said the internet is a gift of God, from God for dialogue. And also give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free 1-800-790-0415. I think this guy is kind of amazing. He's a true 21st century pope.
He's unique.
He certainly is that. I really do love this guy. He goes out in the middle of the night incognito to help the poor. I don't know you can get any more popey than that. I really don't think so.
Mm-hmm. Heck, that even at least this one can get out and do it.
And exactly. He invites little kids to ride in the Pope Mobile. How cool is that?
No, really.
So, yeah, he's a pretty cool guy. I really like this guy. Anyway, to the phones. Our first caller is Al from Greece, New York. Welcome, Al. What's up?
Oh, nothing. How are you three doing today?
We're just peachy. Thanks.
Calling about your poll of the week again.
Yeah.
And personally, I agree with the most majority of them. It's not in the Bible, and I don't understand it. I mean, if he's saying that it's a gift from God, how come God hasn't told us completely?
Well, because God, I think, and again, I am no longer a biblical scholar. I don't even play one on television anymore. But I believe that God gave us a brain and lets us figure some stuff out for ourselves.
Right.
Based on the guidance we get in the Bible. The Bible is a guide, and that guide, and God is a loving father. And every father at some point sends his kids out on their own.
I agree.
He gives them guidance when they're children and then sends them out on their own and follows them and watches over them, but lets them make their own decisions. And I suspect that God is like every other father and does that for us.
Right. Unfortunately, I never even knew my father.
Well, I understand. And I'm sorry about that.
That's okay.
But you understand the concept.
Right.
And I believe that's the kind of father God is.
Exactly. And I know how it feels because I'm Catholic and I understand how it feels.
Yep.
And personally, I feel like God should at least make it a little better.
Well, yeah. The longstanding argument, of course, that many of us stayed up nights arguing back when I was in the seminary is, why does God allow human suffering at all? Why does he allow original sin?
I know, right?
And, you know, that's the whole reason God is a mystery. We don't know that. And
there's nothing we can do to change it.
All right, Al, thank you.
Thank you. Have a good day, guys.
You too.
Bye-bye.
All right, give us a call. You can even ask us computer questions. That would be kind of cool and different. Give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free, 1-800-790-0415.
And we can read, Ulam Khalufa's tome about, that wraps it up for God anyway.
Yeah.
Went on to prove black is white and got killed at a zebra crossing.
Oh, holy cow. It looks like the thing loaded this time. Let's see what happens if I can actually start this hangout. That would be kind of interesting and different for today. Let's see what's going on.
How many OKs do you have to get through before the Hangout starts?
And I've got yet another one. Now I have to invite people to the Hangout. You can't just start a Hangout, you know. You have to go through 50 or 60 hoops before you can actually do much of this stuff. Let's see what happens this time. The Hangouts are great, but, man, it takes a while to get them started. I start the Hangout, then it loads a bunch of stuff, then it asks you who you want to join the Hangout. You've already said you want to make it public, but now you have to add people to the Hangout on air, and then those people get an invitation. And now, although it seems to say it's ready, now I have to actually start the broadcast, and it says you're about to go live, so I click OK. So now, there we are. Now it's actually recording live. Again, for those of you watching the stream, I apologize. Google would not load the required libraries at first. Of course, one of my other stories talks about how Google had an outage yesterday and the internet exploded. But we'll talk about that a little later. Right now, we'll talk to Ed from Ithaca, New York. Hi, Ed. What's up?
Hi, I have a non-theological question.
Unbelievable. Don't know if we can take those today.
Sometimes when I am on, usually Firefox, I get a pop-up that says something about a script is slowing things down. Do you want to delete that or stop it? I always say yes, but it also says there's a checkbox that's available saying do not show this again. So the question is, if I check do not show this again and check stop the script, will it always stop the script, or will it just never give me the choice again?
It doesn't give you the choice. As far as I know, because I've done this myself, It doesn't give you, it doesn't tell you about it again, but it does keep running the scripts.
Okay, so I do not want to check that. I keep wanting to individually each time say stop the script.
Right.
Okay.
And a back step up maybe to not run scripts in the first place.
Oh, how do you do that?
There's a plugin called NoScript that will prevent scripts from running. For two reasons. One, they can slow down the computer. They can install malware. They can do bad things as well as the good things they're trying to do.
It's never something I request.
Well, it's something that website is doing, and you may not know that website is doing it. A plugin like NoScript will stop those scripts from running, and you'll find that it makes your web browsing often a lot faster. But some websites don't work without scripting, especially JavaScript. And so you can have a whitelist of what scripts and what sites you want to be able to run scripts.
Okay. Okay, great. How do I get NoScript?
We had a link on our link list a while ago, but I can put another one on today. Yeah, Google NoScript.
Okay. Very good. Thank you so much for answering this question and all the others that you answer so well.
Well, thank you so much.
Take care.
Have fun.
You know, one thing I should mention, and this is just between you, Steve, and I. It's somebody's birthday today.
And who would that possibly be?
Oh, he runs a station that we're on.
Could it possibly be the lovely and charming Mr. Rob Linton? Unbelievable.
Yep.
Unbelievable.
Of course, you know, we're keeping it on the low key. No, you know, it's just between us three. Nobody else really knows.
So if you see Rob today, feel free to give him a spank.
I didn't say that.
Do people still do that? I suppose they do. I suppose they do. Folks.
Yesterday was the 30th birthday of Macintosh. And so I guess we didn't see what 1984 wouldn't be like 1984.
Right.
From their famous Super Bowl commercial.
Yeah, it was. It was the 30th anniversary, the Macintosh, 30 years old.
There's been a lot of big anniversaries this year. Britain actually had some big anniversaries. It was the 50th anniversary of Doctor Who.
Yep.
50th anniversary of James Bond. It's the 40th anniversary, I think, of No, 60th anniversary of Godzilla. It was the 40th anniversary of something else this week. So a lot of... a lot of big anniversaries coming up. So apparently there's a new Godzilla movie coming out for the 60th anniversary.
Yeah, that's what they were saying. All right, our next caller, we've got about 2 minutes for Joel from Pittsford, New York. Welcome, Joel. What's up?
Okay, guys. I've been asked to look into possibilities for broadcasting a live presentation from one large classroom into two smaller classrooms. The equipment we have, each classroom has... a laptop that is networked and also wireless, and the laptops are connected to overhead projectors via VGA. So looking for suggestions as to how I can do this. Need audio and video.
Something like Ustream or Google Hangouts will do it. Do you need it to be publicly available on the Internet or just between the two classrooms?
Just in two classrooms, although I don't think there'd be a big deal if it was hidden on, you know, nobody would know about it on the Internet.
You can do Google Hangouts, and therefore each of those three classrooms could have a representative on screen if you want.
Okay, I don't need that.
You can always just not have them say anything, right? I mean, the nice thing about Hangouts is you can also record them. But they're not necessarily, well, they'd be, yeah, you can record them. You can do the same thing with Skype if you're paying for it, because you can't do video with more than two people unless you pay for it. You can do audio, but not video.
No, we need a camera.
Right.
And how do I get from the camera to our network?
Well, when you run something like, which I'm doing right now, for example, you run something like a Hangout. You start the Hangout, it automatically puts your camera on screen and sends that video through the Internet. So it really does it all for you.
I don't have a camera, so I would need to get a camera.
Yeah. You need to get a camera in each classroom.
Connected or connect my Ethernet to the network.
Yeah,
well,
easiest
would be connected right to the computer, because that would be the easiest thing for something like Google Hangout or Skype or any of those others to connect to.
So that would be like a USB camera?
USB would do fine, absolutely. If you get a fairly decent camera...
which are $100.
Yeah, they're only $100, so it's not. I'm not talking about a lot of money, but if you get a fairly decent one, you know, you can get $20 cameras nowadays. But you spend the $100, get a decent camera. It's going to have a good focus. It's going to have a good field. It's going to do all kinds of nice things for you. You can focus it. Blah blah blah. Hold on. We got to take a quick break, but we'll be back and stay on the line. We'll be back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, me, Nick Francesco, Joel from Pittsford, and you. It is 20 minutes after the hour. Soundbites on member-supported Jazz 90.1. Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 26 minutes after the hour, we are Soundbites. And we have Joel from Pittsford on the line. Still there, Joel?
Yes, I am.
All right, here's the deal. This is essentially what you would have to do. First, you would make sure you have, let's say you're going to use Google Hangouts, but it's similar for any of the other products we've talked about. But let's say it's Google Hangouts. You make sure that one person in each room has a Google ID.
Which is free.
Mm-hmm.
Then you, on your main person who's going to log in to the classroom, you create a circle in Google Plus that has the other two people in it. Okay?
Yep.
So you now have a group. They're called circles in Google Hangout. Now you have a camera on your main machine.
And a lot of times that can just be the camera built into the laptop if you want.
Right, but if you want
to... We're going to have to show the audience, so we're going to have somebody operating the camera.
Okay. You're talking about zooming in and out of the audience and doing that
we're
kind of stuff.
We're videoing a presentation, so we're going to be showing slides, the presenter, and whatever else.
Oh, that's a whole different thing than you were... Okay, that's a whole different thing than what you were talking about. That's a separate... That's a whole separate thing.
Well, you can do the same sort of thing with Hangouts, but you can use a regular video camera that feeds into the computer over FireWire, HDMI, or USB, or a webcam. It's like we do it at CIDR. And you just point it at the speaker. You point it at the screen that's showing.
Right.
Can you do desktop capture from Google Hangouts to show your desktop?
Yep.
I do the same thing with Ustream, which streams to the internet, and then you just receive it on the other computers.
Right, and in fact, that's not a bad way to do it at all, because now you've got someone operating the computer, being the Google Hangout guru,
the coordinator,
mm-hmm. and then that frees up the person actually giving the presentation. They don't have to do anything but give their presentation.
Yeah.
You then start the Hangout, invite the other two people to it, which means somebody in each of the other two rooms says, yeah, I want to join this Hangout. It comes up on their screens, which you could always project onto a big screen. And then they only have to sit there and watch. And then from the main room, the main person with the main camera plugged into the computer, they're giving their presentation. Somebody's filming it, maybe, whatever. If you have computers on the, if you have cameras on the other computers, you could then take questions and answers from the other room and do all kinds of stuff like that.
Mm-hmm. Any recommendations for cameras?
Logitech makes great ones. You're talking about something more along the lines of a larger,
just like a regular video camera from Canon or Sony or something.
Right. Most video cameras Most video cameras have a video out, which means they can also not only record video but also stream it to a computer simultaneously. So you could use one of those if you want something that you can zoom in and zoom out and do all of that stuff. You're looking at a somewhat higher-end device because camera lenses are still analog, and they aren't cheap.
At the site, guys. Sure.
Give me some good suggestions. Appreciate it.
All right, there you go. Thanks.
At the cider meeting, we had a guy that was our camera operator, Skip, and then he got too busy and couldn't do it anymore. But he was actually just using an iPhone on a tripod as the camera, using the Ustream app on the iPhone to do the recording and the streaming. And then he can pan and zoom on to whoever was speaking. He can point at the screen. I use a program on the Mac called CamTwist that allows me to overlay a date and timestamp on the camera. So your video recording has that timestamp. And I can feed the desktop of my computer into the camera feed if I want to. So it's used to be horribly expensive to do this type of stuff. And now the software is all free, and it's just the manpower. You need someone to run the computer that's hosting it. You need someone to run the cameras that's hosting it.
Right. And, of course, the only other thing you would need in that instance is a microphone for the presenter. Because
right.
They're probably not going to be close enough to be picked up by
right.
the laptop.
So, yeah, you want a PA system of some sort that you use as the audio input to your software.
Exactly.
So that whoever is speaking on whatever mic they're on, you can get that audio in.
Right. All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is David from Walcott, New York. Welcome, David. How are you?
Pretty good, thank you. First of all, probably an easy one, a login problem with your site. I haven't logged in about a year.
Which our site?
The Soundbites forum.
Okay.
And it didn't log me in and wanted me to reset it and send an email. But it asked me for a CAPTCHA. And there was no CAPTCHA screen or no CAPTCHA.
Really? If you scroll down, you still didn't see one?
No, I didn't.
Do you have NoScript or some other ad blocker running?
Oh, maybe.
Because that may have blocked the script that's creating the CAPTCHA.
Okay. I'll check on that. My real question is, though, my real need is a recommendation for a database program for an Android tablet. You have any ideas?
Oh, that's an
database.
Interesting question.
On the iPad, I'd say Bento is a nice database program from FileMaker.
Is this something you need to have on the Android itself, or is this something you want to get to from somewhere else?
On the Android. I have a Nexus 7 tablet.
All right. HandyBase.
Okay.
Is one, there's an SQLite.
Han D-Base?
H-A-N-D-Base.
Yeah, Han D-Base. Yeah. I sort of take a point of pride that I have never agreed to the D-Base license.
Congratulations.
Because when it comes up on screen and says, you know, press F1 to continue and agree to the license, if you wait long enough, it just went past anyway. So, so I never had to agree to the license.
But you should be able to go to the Google Play Store. I'm doing that right now. Go to the Google Play Store at play.google.com/store.
Oh, they have an Apple version, too.
And go
iPad.
To the apps.
And there's hundreds of them. I just didn't know which one to choose.
Oh, I see what you're saying. Yeah. I have not... I'm afraid use them because I do all of my database stuff off of one of my servers so that I can use it anywhere at any time without worrying about that. But I would do and for many of them they're free, so it can't hurt to do a little research.
Right. My idea for a free one is you get what you pay for. I'm not opposed to paying for something. Is that a fair assumption? Should I pay for something?
I'm with you. You get what you pay for, and you pay for what you get.
Mm-hmm.
That's very clear in all things. But I would also pay attention to the ratings. Many of them have no rating. Many of them have one rating, which is probably the author.
Great.
So I wouldn't get excited about that. But And
even the pay ones are relatively inexpensive. It looks like Candy Base is $10.
Right.
Right. So I would certainly take a look around at them. Handy Bay seems to be, it's $9.99.
And it's virtually every platform. Apple, Android, BlackBerry, Palm, Windows, Symbian.
Right. And it lets you do your own stuff, so you can your own forms, so you can do all kinds of really interesting things. There are add-ons for it. It looks really like Handy Base is the way to go for a lot of these.
Now, do you need what we would call a full relational database, or can you just use like a spreadsheet for a list of data?
From my limited knowledge of, I've used Excel and I've touched Access. Here's what I need to do. I bought some property, and there was a barn on it. In the back, there was a probably hundreds, if not thousands, of Bridgestone motorcycle parts. And I've joined a Bridgestone group, and people are interested in it. But I need to inventory it. Some of them have. Some of the parts, they're all in bins, those cardboard bins, but some of the parts have original part numbers on them. Some of them just have names. Some of them were written on tags by the person who owned it. The guy died after I bought the property about 6 months later, so, I don't have any problem with selling this stuff.
Right.
And some of them I'm just going to have to be able to describe. And I want to be able to pull that up when people ask me, do you have this sort of part for this sort of, this number of, this bike, model bike, and all of that.
Yeah, so you could do something like that just in Excel as a list. But creating a database gives you more searching options, more reporting options. You can have a picture of the part in it a little easier than trying to put a picture into a cell.
You can sort by
Excel.
Year and everything.
Yeah, all the sorting and searching
is exactly
a lot easier.
That's what I want to do.
Yeah.
Well, you can also buy Handy Base for your Windows or Mac computer as well and do most of your work there, where, frankly, it's a lot easier to enter descriptions and stuff that way. And then they have an add-on, which you may have to pay for on top of that, that lets you sync it to your phone and to your computer. So you can create it wherever you want, in fact, in both places. So if you sell something and take it off the list on your Android, you can sync that back to all the other things as well. So I would definitely take a look at it. It's a company called ddhsoftware.com, Steve is going to put up a link on our website.
Okay, great.
And they've got free trial versions available for desktop platforms.
Great. Okay, thank you very much.
There you go.
All right.
And quite often you could find a pre-built database application for managing inventory parts.
Right. In fact, these folks have downloadable templates.
Yeah, 2,000 free templates available, which is always kind of neat. Let someone else do the work for you.
Exactly. If it works for you, if it fits your need.
Yeah, that's sort of the question. You write your own database, and then it can do exactly what you want it to do. But that takes more time and more effort and more skill on your part. Or you buy someone else's pre-built template. And maybe you have to adjust your business a little bit to fit their template, but that's often a lot faster.
Right. Looks like a nice little product, however.
Yeah, I just got to see what the
price
is.
Did you just buy it?
Free,
you downloaded
free
it.
Trial.
Free trial.
Yeah. So, FileMaker is kind of the big cross-platform database, Mac, Windows, iOS. I don't know if they have an Android version. And then Microsoft Access is the 800-pound gorilla on only the Microsoft platform.
Is that
big
music
thing.
I hear in the background? Yeah. Very low. All right, we're going to take a quick break. Back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, me, Nick Francesco, and you. 39 minutes after the hour, Sound Bites on Member Supported Jazz 90.1. Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 45 minutes after the hour, we are Soundbites. Give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free 1-800-790-0415. Just like Dave did from Canandaigua, New York. Welcome, Dave. What's up?
Well, a number of things. The previous caller that was looking to do presentations
sure, Joel,
over
from
multiple
Pittsburgh.
Computers, there's a couple. There's some free software. If you do a search on alternative to WebEx, who are the real high-end video conferencing, there's a number of programs out there that will do that depending on there's some that are free depending on the number of guests you want to invite and things like that. And it doesn't require, I mean, it's just you sign up and you create an invitation and away you go. There's hardly anything to figure out. It's real simple.
Cool. Thanks. Excellent.
One quick question is more of an assumption. Playing around with virtual machines is that each guest requires its own anti-malware regimen?
Oh, yes.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. Because each, when you create a virtual machine, you're creating a unique instance of an operating system.
Right.
And it does not have any connection to any other instance of an operating system.
Yeah. I thought so. I just wanted to make sure. So let's get to the really important question, though, since we've been on the subject in your opening statements. Is God a Mac user or a PC user?
Yes. I believe God is a Linux user.
That could be.
I believe God is root for the entire universe.
Well, that's all I've got for now.
All right. Thanks, Dave.
Well.
Normally, I have to admit, I don't get into religious debates. If you want to debate either religion or politics with me, your basic, the only real way to do that is to come to my house and buy the beer.
The Pope's official app is available on Mac and Windows and iTunes and Android. So they have apps for all of the platforms.
The Pope app.
Yeah.
What a world we live in, you know? All right. Our next caller is Joe from Kent, New York. Welcome, Joe. What's up?
Thank you. Hopefully a very basic and simple question. I want to have a RAM update on my desktop. Okay, I've got the module, and I went to install it, and there are two slots, both of which are occupied. What do I do next? How do I insert this?
Well, you're going to have to check the manual that came with the logic board. Some logic boards require two matched pairs of RAM installed at the same time.
Yeah, but he's already saying, though, he's got two in there.
There's two in there, right. So you sometimes you can take one out and put a bigger one in. Sometimes you have to take them both out and put two bigger ones in.
All right, if I were to take one out, do I lose the data that were contained?
No.
There is no data on the RAM. The data is all on the hard drive.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, no, what it is, which isn't going to buy you anything, here's the rub. If you're taking out an 8-gig stick and putting in an 8-gig stick,
right,
you're not going to gain anything.
So say your computer had 2 gigs of RAM and you bought another 2-gig chip, that 2 gigs of RAM is probably two ones. And so when you take out a one and add a two, you're going to go to three.
Yeah.
So what you want to do, you know, for the next time and everybody else, see what RAM is in your computer first. See if you have any empty slots that you can add more to. Because if you don't have any empty slots, you have to take out the RAM that's in there and then put bigger cards in.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, actually, the manual states that I have 3 gigabytes installed, which is actually 2.6 usable.
Right.
So you probably have a 2 and 1.
I got a 4-gigabyte replacement. Now, I can remove one of the original and put in this 4?
Yeah, if it's got 3 now, then you probably have a 2 and a 1.
Yeah.
Well, okay. Well, no, let's back up a step. Do you have 32-bit OS or 64-bit OS?
64.
Okay. So I was afraid he had 4 gigs of RAM, but only 3 is usable on a 32-bit
system.
So
assuming your motherboard will take it, you can remove the 1 and replace it with a 4.
Right.
Which will give you 6.
Okay.
So that's the other thing to check in the manual is how much maximum RAM the logic board can take.
Okay, yeah. All right, I can do that.
All right, there you go.
And the Rams cards themselves are generally keyed. There's a notch in the Ram card that's off center, so it's keyed to only fit the right way. So if you're pushing hard and it's not fitting, try it the other way.
Yeah.
don't push harder. Try
and
it the other.
And of course, you know to turn the thing off and to ground yourself and all that yada yada.
Yeah, maintain keep one hand touching a piece of metal on the computer while your other hand is pushing the card in. Sometimes at our shop, we'll leave them plugged in so the computer is grounded. But then we make sure we disconnect the power button so it can't turn itself on while you're in there.
Right.
But when you have the power cord plugged in, the computer's grounded as well.
And of course, worry about electrostatic discharge for yourself. Yep. That's what that's about. This but it also means on the way over to the computer, don't shuffle your feet if you got a carpet.
This was a rough week at our office. There was so much static everywhere. Anything I touched, I zapped. So I had to make sure I had my wrist strap on, but I still had to touch the computer to ground myself to the computer before I got inside of it.
Yep.
And a lot of computers have plastic shelves, so you have to make sure you touch something metal. Yeah. Right. To make sure you're grounded.
Touching this isn't going to do me any good. I got to touch here.
Yeah, where the metal is.
Right. All right, our next caller is Ray from Webster, New York. Welcome, Ray. What's up?
Oh, I'm a Neanderthal operating Quark Express 6.0.
Wow.
And I need to, I'm limited to how high I can go up. I just want to go up one stage. I need 6.1 in order to install 6.5. And I'm trying to find somewhere where I can get that.
Yeah.
For free, of course.
6.1 was a free update to 6.0, and then 6.5 is another free update to 6.1.
Except that they no longer offer 6.1.
Right. Yeah, a lot of companies, Quark is currently up to version 10 now. So a lot of companies will remove the downloads to the older versions.
Right.
Which
I
is kind of silly
that.
Because it doesn't take anything but disk space. So the problem is trying to find an older version download.
That's right.
And oldversions.com, oldsoftware.com sometimes will have, or the Internet Archive, the Wayback Machine.
The Wayback Machine may have it. There's
Wait, you guys.
There's.
I got a slow pencil here. I can't write that.
All right.
Yeah, we're looking for it too ourselves. So,
Softonic.
They're a download source.
I was on a site called download.com.
Yeah.
And when you click on their link to get it, you can't find it.
Right. So a lot of those, like Softonic and Download.com, will point back to the original publisher. So you try to click on download, it will probably send you to Quark's page to download it. And Quark has removed it from their page.
Right.
But it's possible that the Internet Archive at archive.org, which basically archives all web pages, and I'm trying to type while I'm talking here too, that you could find an old copy of the Quark Express website at archive.org.
Yeah, but it might not have the stuff
it might
that
have,
was on that.
Right, it might
website.
Have might not have that other download link. So it's basically
maybe there's someone out there listening right now who living somewhere and could make a phone call.
Well, what you want to do is go into our forums and start a topic. And that way you can get in touch with somebody, even if they're listening. Because a lot of people listen via the archive, so you don't, they're not real time. So if we say to them, the easiest thing to do is to go to the website, go into the forums, find your post, and then they can get directly in touch with you, is probably the best way to do that. So make sure you're registered at the Soundbites website and go into the forum, start a topic on Quark Express 6.1, and hopefully someone will have something for you.
And you can do the same sort of thing at like the Apple Cider users group forum, some of the bigger website forums like maybe macworld.com. Somebody may still have that 6.1 downloader available.
Well, because it was free.
Wish me luck.
Yep.
Good luck.
Okay.
It was free, so that's not an issue in the sense that we're not saying you can steal something because it was a free download.
Yeah, they just took it off their website. I know I had looked through a lot of my old stuff to see if I could still find it. I found the 6.51 updater, which is where Ray got it from me, but I haven't found anyone with the 6.1 update. But here I am at archive.org, and I'm hitting the button that says download the 6.1 update. Let me see if it's going to let me, and yeah, we'll find out. So, yeah, it's a very annoying thing when companies take old stuff off the web, because all it takes is disk space. But from their point of view, they don't want to be answering any more questions for version 6. They want you to buy version 10.
Right. All right, our next caller, Larry from Rochester, New York. Welcome, Larry. What's up?
Hi. Hopefully it's a quick one. I've got a Samsung Galaxy phone. I'm looking at a Samsung Galaxy tablet that has the near-field capabilities on it. What are the security issues with this? I think this will be the first time I've used a near-field type-compatible devices. I just don't know what the security issues are.
Well, there's several issues there. Near-field communication means that's the phone where you could tap it on somebody else's phone or on one of those things to pay. You know, you see credit cards now where you just can tap the thing and it pays. Same idea.
I was going to use it to transfer photos from the phone to the laptop, but there's now, like, I don't know, major security issues.
Well, theoretically,
you can set it up so that it's only on when you want it to be on, and that it has to be verified every time it gets used.
Which is the way you want to do it. Because theoretically, anyone walking by you can grab stuff off your phone through the near field. There have been a lot of cases in like supermarket checkout lines where they've got the payment box there where you can tap your credit card or tap your phone to pay rather than actually swipe it. Mm-hmm. There was a big issue I read about a couple of weeks ago where a woman was trying to put in her card and it had already read the NFC card in her purse before she swiped the card.
Wow.
And theoretically, near-field communication is what, one inch or less?
Yeah.
Well, this caught her purse that was 2 or 3 feet away.
Mm-hmm. Well, I've already learned how to turn it off and on the phone, so.
Right. So keep it off until you need it, and in the settings, have it verify every time it does something.
Well, thank you. I appreciate the information.
There you go. And I agree that's a little more inconvenient, but it also is a whole lot safer. So there's no reason not to do it that way, you know. Near-field communication is a great thing. It means that, you know, you could tap two phones together and transfer data back and forth. You can pay for stuff. You can do, you know, whatever it exists. Japan has had this for 4 years, 5 years?
Forever.
And
forever in computer years,
right? Forever in computer years, most of their all that I know of their vending machines. So I'll say most of their vending machines do this. So you can actually walk up to a vending machine, tap it with your phone, and get a soda or whatever it is you want.
Yeah. So instead of needing to carry a payment card with you or something like that, everyone already has their phone, so that becomes your payment card.
Right. And then assuming that you keep your phone locked and all of that stuff, it's fairly safe. But I'll tell you what, it really is very convenient and very useful. And
it's online, quite 24 hours a day.
Conversation starter when you take out your phone to pay for something. We're going to take a slightly longer break. You have wasted an entire hour of your life. At this, by the way, we want to thank all the folks. We had a one-day pledge drive on Thursday. I want to thank all the folks, particularly a couple of our listeners. I want to thank the folks who were so generous with their money to keep this station on the air and keep all the good things coming. We're going to take a break back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, with Steve Ray, with me, Nick Francesco. And you, it is 59 minutes after the hour. You're listening to the longest running computer show in the known universe. We are Soundbites, and we are right here on the truly great and truly member-supported Jazz 90.1. See you on the other side.
Got a computer question? Call the boys now at 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299 or toll-free 800-790-0415. Online at soundbites.org. Soundbites continues next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 6 minutes after the hour, we are Soundbite, file type colon PDF, okay. Or DMG, yeah. Whatever it is you want. We're just trying to help figure out how to find that thing. And then in Google, you can search for something by a file type. So you can search for example, Quark 6.1, file type colon DMG with no spaces anywhere in that file type colon DMG. DMG is the package type.
Does that have to be first, maybe?
No, that should work.
They didn't find any. No.
Well,
hit,
it might
no
not
hits.
Find any, yeah. But that's a separate
issue.
The
search is working.
Search is working. It's just not finding anything. All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is Jerry from Rochester, New York. Welcome, Jerry. What's up?
Hey, thank you. I'm kind of naive about computers, or I find myself that way every day. Is there some free word processing where?
Some yes. What?
Free word processing.
You know, to word process. To
oh, free. Free.
Diaries,
I'm sorry. That's
letters,
the word.
Things of that sort.
LibreOffice, LIBRE, office.org.
.org. Okay.
.org. What that is LibreOffice is essentially Microsoft Office. It has a word processor, a spreadsheet, a presentation
wow.
package, a database, a drawing package, equation editor, all kinds of stuff. It is all 100% free.
Fantastic.
Now, it is wow. not exactly Word. So if you're very used to Word, you have uh-huh. a little bit of learning to do.
Okay.
But
okay.
it does all the same stuff.
Uh-huh.
Particularly if you're just a casual user and you're just looking to write, you know.
Pretty much.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, that's pretty much what I'm interested in, yeah.
Yeah, it's yeah. available for every operating system, Windows, Mac, and Linux. It's a free
wow.
download, even, free updates.
And for very simple, just text processing, you've got WordPad that comes with Windows and TextEdit that comes with the Mac.
There's also one called Abbey Word, ABI Word.
Which is a free download as
free,
well. Yep.
A free program as well that's a very basic word processor.
Okay.
One step above WordPad, one step below LibreOffice.
Oh, okay. Okay. So WordPad, you mean, or Abbey Word is a step above the WordPad?
Yeah.
Yeah, okay. And the other question I have is... I have Skype on my computer, and I tried to put it on my girlfriend's computer, which is an Apple laptop, and I couldn't get anywhere with it.
Do you have
options for that?
Yeah, you do have to download the Mac version of Skype. You can't use the Windows version.
Okay.
And then,
so if we went through her computer and put in Skype.
Yeah, go to Skype.com and click the download button. And that will download the Mac version of Skype and then install it on her Mac, and then you can talk to her over the Internet.
Oh, okay. Okay. Because when I tried it before, it said it doesn't accept, forgetting the other system right now.
Right, with the Windows stuff. And I get that. Yeah, you can't. The programs are the same, but the files that do the installing are different.
Oh, okay.
So you have to get the right installer for the operating system you have.
Okay, got it. Okay. Well, I'll make another attempt.
Yep.
And that's
the way it works.
That's what's nice about Skype is it does work cross-platform. Mac, Windows, Android, iOS. Works on televisions these
Linux.
Days. Linux devices. Apple has their own video and audio chat program called FaceTime, but that only works among Apple devices. So
right.
Skype is nice, and it's completely free to go computer to computer. And if you do want to call a regular telephone, they have some pretty low rates, but you do pay for that.
Okie doke. Our next caller is Al from Greece, New York. Welcome, Al. What's up?
Hi. I have a Windows 7, And what's happening is in the picture library, a lot of documents keep showing up. And they're from Adobe Installer, some temporary files, some ARM files, some data files, DIL files.
It sounds like you have your download folder set to be your picture library.
Because I never set anything. That's that. All you hear is that.
Well, whether you set it.
The library says three locations, and it says my pictures, public pictures, and temporary files.
There you go. So your temporary files should not be part of your picture library. Temporary files are things that are temporarily downloaded from the internet to do something else.
Okay.
So you need.
I'm just learning this Windows 7. It's.
Yeah.
It's fun.
It's a brave new world, isn't it?
Yep. And the only thing is, there's one file that I saw. It only has numbers on it. It's 11223345566 all the way up.
It's probably a temp file from
some temp file from some places. That's something that's a virus or something.
Well, listen, if it does, it end in .tmp.
Doesn't end in anything. It just goes from there's a two ones. Are double numbers, 1 through 8, or 11, 12, 13.
Okay, what you could probably delete. Yeah. Have you rebooted your computer since you got that file?
Right, I have, yeah.
Then just go ahead and delete it.
And this was in 115.
Yeah, go ahead and delete it.
Yeah, go ahead and delete it.
Delete all those.
Some install programs, when they install stuff, they don't always do a very good job of cleaning up their mess.
Yeah, and that's all in the temp folder.
Yep, that's all in your. That's all part of the temporary directory.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. I'm looking. I find something on Microsoft's website for adding a folder to the library, but I don't see anything on how to remove a folder from the library.
Well, if you in the picture library, it's just. Includes three locations, and there's add and remove.
Okay, you want to remove. Yep.
And put remove temporary, it removes the temporary thing
right.
on the list.
That'll work.
Right.
Yep.
Yeah. Okay, and the other thing is I'm having trouble with my upload speed from Frontier. It's been fluctuating quite a bit. It goes like from 0.6 milliseconds. Microsoft a second. Then all of a sudden, I've been calling them, and they got it up to close to 6 now. But then sometime it fluctuates back down again.
Yep.
And is that kind of a common thing with Frontier?
It's common with the internet, period.
Yeah, really. Yeah.
Oh, the internet?
No matter who your provider is.
The problem is it's not just you and Frontier.
Okay.
There's a connection between you and the other end you're trying to upload to.
Mm-hmm.
And that goes through Frontier, but may also go through 10, 15, 20 other connections.
Yeah.
And the problem can be anywhere along there, and you have no control over it. Frontier has no control over it.
Sometimes replacing the phone wires helps, from your computer to the pole outside.
Mm-hmm.
If you have an old house, you might have old wiring. If you're very far... physically from the Frontier phone switch.
Told me I'm 9,000 feet.
That's about half the 20,000 feet maximum. So it's that can be a problem also if you're too far from the switch.
I'm trying to get the thing straight, and I thought I'd call up and ask and see how far I have to go.
Also, download speeds are faster than upload speeds. When they quote you 5 meg, 6 meg, whatever they quote you, that's download speed. Upload speed is always going to be slower.
Yes, 0.3.
Yeah, usually about a tenth of your download speed.
Okay. Well, thank you very much, guys.
You're welcome.
All right, thanks. Yep.
Have a good day.
That's too.
That's why we're anxiously waiting for green light.
Green light.
They're symmetric, right?
So,
one gigabit symmetric.
I am so waiting for green light, please.
Any estimate?
Hurry. They said January. They have very few days left.
Yeah,
to get to me if they're doing it in January, but I'll even wait until February. I desperately want green light.
So Green Light Networks is a local company that's putting fiber to the home, and you can get 100 megabits for $50 a month. So that's like the 6 that the caller was saying he was getting from Frontier. You can get 100 from Green Light for $50 a month, or you can get 1,000 for $250 a month if you're really a speed demon.
Well, if you really want to have
any cap,
your own, no,
cap.
if you want your own servers or whatever it is, you know, if you're a business or you're an apartment building or that sort of thing, then you definitely want the gigabit speed because you're going to share that once it hits your building. You share it to all the offices. You're going to share it to all the houses, to all the apartments.
No,
but they need to physically run fiber in your neighborhood and then to your house.
Right. So they're doing each neighborhood fairly slowly as they go along.
Right. So if you go to the greenlightsnet.com website, I'll put another link up for it. If you sign up for service, you're not committing to anything, but you're telling them where to go next. So you get enough people and go to all your neighbors and say, go sign up. And if enough of the neighbors sign up too, then they know where to go next in their layouts.
Everyone who's in the Upper Monroe neighborhood or any of the surrounding neighborhoods, please, please, I'm begging you, go sign up at Greenlight. Like Steve said, you're not committing to anything. It's just a kind of an informal poll as to where they should set up next.
No, why I asked that question, though, is because they're not going to put any cap on it.
No, they're not.
That might put a squash, finally, on the cable company, you know, how they kept threatening to throttle down and everything else and pay you, you know, you pay for what you use.
Yeah, usage-based internet is something we don't and haven't ever considered. You know, they talk about your water bill. You only pay for the water you use. Well, you don't worry about that because you turn the pipe off when you're done.
Exactly.
But if you have to stop and think, do I really want to download this file? Do I really want to watch this movie? Do I want to update my computer that everyone keeps telling me I should load these updates for? If you have to stop and think before you download something, that really kills the versatility and usefulness of the internet.
Yep. Right, and that's my argument against data caps on your phone as well. And I know everybody says, well, I never use that much data. It's not my point, right? I mean, it's not about do you regularly. The point is, do you have to think about it? And if this really is a commodity device, if this is a device that I'm going to use as a true utility, I don't want to have to think about it.
And the Pope says it's a gift from God, so you can't
charge
meter
me
our
for
gift from God.
That's exactly right. Doggone it, these people. Blasphemers, heretics. All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is Charles from Irondequoit, New York. Welcome, Charles.
Good afternoon, guys. I enjoy your program a lot. I've listened to you many years.
Thank you.
Recently, I had my computer working real well, and then one day I turned it off, and the next day I turned it on, and it wouldn't pick up the wireless router that I have. Now, I have a Nook, and I know the wireless is working because I can go on the Internet on that. So I don't know what to do. I tried to call the people that I bought the computer from, but they haven't answered my phone call. I don't know.
Now, you're saying this is a laptop or a desktop?
It's a desktop.
And it definitely has a wireless connection in it. You're not wired to the network.
Yeah, it's been working fine for 5 years.
You may want to check the back of the computer and see if the antenna came unplugged.
No, the antenna is, I've checked, I've pulled the antenna. That's the little box that sits there. I don't know all these terms, but a little thing that sits on the top and has a wire goes down. I reset that.
Okay. Sounds like he's got an external USB Wi-Fi adapter.
Yeah.
Are there any lights on that little box?
Yeah, the lights seem to go on in the little box.
Does the computer see that the card is there?
The computer says that the card is there, and I actually went in and checked it out and said that the thing is working fine. In other words, I went into the program.
Mm-hmm. Does it see any network? Does it see like a neighbor's network?
It won't pick up any network. I tried that once before, and I tried it again this morning before I called, and I just can't. It used to be when I clicked on it.
All right, Charles,
wireless thing.
Charles,
show me the
Charles,
network,
Charles, Charles, hold on a second. We have to take a break. Do not hang up. We'll come back to you. Back in just a couple of seconds. Soundbites, member supported Jazz 90.1. Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 25 minutes after the hour, we still have Charles from Irondequoit on the line. You still there, Charles?
I'm still here.
All right. What we're thinking is, if this has been working for 5 years, it may just be that the device is dead.
It's the device in the computer.
Right. Well,
the little box that's sitting on top of the computer.
Or the box on top.
Right. Right. Yeah. The other thing is, when you turn everything off and then back on again, is it all on one switch?
I got a strip, and I've got three plugs in it. And
the computer, the monitor, and this little box.
The monitor is turned off when I turn everything off.
Right. So one of the plugs is to this little box.
No, the little thing that comes up, the little thing that's sitting on the computer with kind of an antenna wand on it.
Right.
Is that what you're talking about?
Yeah. Yes.
Where does that plug in?
Hello?
Where does that plug in?
That plugs into the back of the computer.
And it does not plug into power anywhere?
No, it doesn't.
Okay.
Never has.
What it sounds like is that device itself has died.
Just worn out with age.
Even though there's a light blinking on it.
Yeah, it's either the connection is not tight.
Okay, I've pulled it out a couple times and put it back in a couple times.
Have you tried putting it in a different USB port?
No, I haven't tried that.
Try that. It may be that port is dead. The only way anybody's going to be able to tell this, unfortunately, is if they actually see it. If you bring your computer to a reputable dealer, let them actually look at it.
Well, yeah, I tried to call a dealer, and I didn't get any answer from it, so.
Yeah, well, you might want to try a different one.
Okay.
Sorry.
Okay, thank you very much.
All right, thanks, Charles. Good luck.
Yeah, we sometimes forget about our Wi-Fi boxes and our router boxes. Sometimes they're on, usually sometimes in a closet under the desk, and they're always on. They never rest. So sometimes they need to rest. Just unplug it overnight and just let everything rest. And they wear out over time, just like anything else, especially
right.
Because it's always on, never being thought about.
Right.
You never think about it until it doesn't work. And, oh, my God, I can't live without my computer.
I was at a friend's house, and he said he was having trouble with his wireless. I said, well, let's take a look at it. Where's your wireless box? He had to think for a while.
Yep.
We went to find it. It was covered in dust, which is a phenomenal insulator, so the thing had overheated and died.
Yep.
And he said, but my house is clean. I said, I know, but you never look up on this shelf and dust the one thing that's sitting there, which is your wireless router. And I get that. So, all right, back to the phones. Our next caller is Ron from Rochester, New York. Welcome,
yeah, hi,
Ron.
Hi, guys. A while back, I had to do a restore for my computer. I got Windows 7. And after it booted up, I had some problems with the computer. Not only with my Thunderbird, it would not let me forward more than one individual, nor will it let me open up any links that people send me. But I was mostly concerned about that I totally lost on the left-hand side of the screen where it's if you go to pictures, it'll come up and it'll say copy to CD, write to CD, and all these options. I lost it all. What I have now is just a bunch of folders that might be under documents, recent documents, and I'm trying to figure out how to get back all the other options.
Oftentimes what happens is when you do that restore, any software that you've added or modified since that restore point may not work right because it's actually taking your Windows machine back in time to the way it was before. So you may need to reinstall whatever software you're missing.
Like Windows 7?
No, the burning software that you said was missing.
Oh, okay. So any new software they got with the machine, when I had it made, there would be something, a disk in there.
Right, something that right. You added since the initial install.
Okay. Do you have any idea why would I have to download my Thunderbird all over again on top of what I have now to allow me to open up any links?
That may have been an actual update into Thunderbird. They have a setting where you can't open links because it's dangerous.
Okay, because I've been looking for things, and I couldn't find anything. I was wondering, because it won't let me forward any more than one person. I click on forward, I add one person, I add another one. It deletes the first person, maintains the latest. So, all right, I'll check that out with settings. Okay, thank
you. That was weird.
All right.
But opening links in an email can be dangerous because you don't know if it's a good link or a fake link. So some of the email programs will prevent you from opening a link. And that's often a setting in either privacy or security.
Right. You can look at your preferences, and you're probably going to have to go through a bunch of them and see what could have caused that. But it sounds like a preference setting.
Oh, in Thunderbird itself. Yeah.
All right. Our next caller is John from Irondequoit, New York. Welcome, John. What's up?
Hi, guys. Thanks for taking my call.
Yep.
I have a question related to audio playback. I have a new HP laptop, HP Envy laptop, and the operating system is Windows 8.1. And I bought a set of speakers that are made by Klipsch, and it has a wired subwoofer and two satellite speakers. And when I tried these out, it seemed as though there was a wide range of fluctuation in the playback itself, in the volume of the audio. And I'm wondering why that is. It was really obvious. There was no subtlety to it, and it just seemed to be like on a wave of fluctuation from a low, like very flat dynamic range to a higher volume, wider dynamic range of sound.
In a single playback?
Yeah. Well, what I'm saying, like say I'm playing, a file from my iTunes library.
And it's all within one playback. The sound gets louder and softer and louder and softer.
Yes.
In one song.
Correct.
That's weird.
Now, I can tell you that the instructions for the speakers say that they are designed to connect to a line-in rather than the headphones jack. And unfortunately, that's the only jack available on the laptop.
Then that's probably the problem. The headphone jack is very low volume, very low power, which means very low volume. So the speakers are probably trying to draw more power than there is on the headphone jack.
Okay.
And you have to plug it into a line-out jack, or you have to get an amplifier in the middle.
Okay, I think the speakers, they do have a built-in amplification system, ProMedia 2.1. I don't know if you're familiar with that. But I wonder, is there an adapter that maybe could go from USB to
line out, yeah.
The situation? Sorry?
Yeah, there are USB audio adapters that would give you line-out audio from your USB. In fact, I'm using one right now, the Griffin iMic. It gives me line-in and line-out. As well as mic in and mic out.
Okay. And those would be available, I'm assuming, at most electronics.
Right, but before you do that, check in the Windows Sound app in the control panel.
Okay.
There is an option that's under communications. If you open up the Sound app, you should see a series of tabs, one of which is communication.
Okay.
And it'll say when Windows detects communications activity, you can mute the other sounds, reduce the volume of other sounds, or do nothing. See what that's set to and set it to do nothing. It may be that it's detecting, it's somehow your microphone is on, and it's detecting that there is activity, sound activity in the room, and is therefore reducing the volume of other sounds of the music so that those other sounds, so that let's say you're listening to music and you get a phone call through your computer. What you want is the computer to reduce the sound by 50% or 80% or whatever it is so that kind of mutes in the background while you're talking on the phone.
I see.
It's essentially doing that same thing, but there's no other sound. So all you get is a reduction of the sound you're listening to. So
I got it.
Check that first. If it's set to anything other than do nothing, set it to do nothing.
Okay, so control panel, communications, and then...
No. Control panel, sound.
Okay.
Inside sound, communications, and do nothing.
Okay. Okay, I'll try that, and then maybe the answer is that USB adapter for line in, line out.
Exactly.
Or a different set of speakers that plugs into the headphone jack.
Right. That'd probably be the last option.
Clips are a really decent speaker. We have a few of their sets at our store, too.
Well, I went with the laptop with the higher quality sound card. It's got the Beats Audio sound card, and I was thinking, okay, I'm going to be rocking and rolling with this combination of this, you know, the powered subwoofer and the Clips speaker set and the Beats Audio sound card, but it hasn't been the case so far.
Right.
Yeah. If
Well, try that first. Can't hurt.
Okay. Thank you.
Yep.
That was always an issue when you're trying to record sound too. That if you plug a microphone into a line jack or you plug a line into a microphone jack, it doesn't work right, even though they're the same physical size. The mic level and the line level are radically different power levels and different noise, different impedance, and things just don't work right if you're not matching the right levels.
Right. Okay, back to the phones. Our next caller is Mark from Greece, New York. Hi, Mark. What's up?
Hi, guys. How are you?
Peachy. How are you?
I'm fine. I got two comments. One was the gentleman with the sound problem.
Yep.
I had a similar problem, and mine was stemming from in the Realtek audio. I don't know if he has Realtek audio, but mine has a loudness equalization check in the properties, and that was messing with my audio, getting loud and soft and loud and soft. So that could be, I don't know, like I said, if he's using Realtek, I'm not sure, but that was a real problem for me.
Well, whatever his audio card is might have something like that. Good choice. Good thought.
Yeah. Second one was the gentleman that said that he had to restore the computer.
Yeah.
Never had a good experience doing that. I've always done the what they call destructive reinstall, where it erases the hard drive. And
right.
Because nothing ever works right after you do that.
Yeah.
At least never for me. I've always had broken programs, tried to reinstall them. I couldn't reinstall them.
Right.
I had
to fix the one.
But the uninstall files were gone.
Yep. You may fix the one little thing that didn't work, but you're going to break a whole lot more sometimes.
Yeah, yep. I just never had really good luck with it. I always suggest to everybody just to do a total reinstall. Erase the drive and start new. Things run better. Things just a lot better.
Right. You may still have to do a bunch of stuff with Restore, but the big difference between the two is that in one, you get a clean copy of the registry.
Exactly.
And, of course, if you buy a new machine, everybody listening to me should hear this. If you buy a new machine or you do a complete reinstall of the operating system so it's cold, so it's like a new machine, the first program you should install is Revo One Installer. And after that, always use Revo to do an uninstall, because what Windows does is a bunch of stuff goes into the registry when you install something. What Windows does is just put a marker in there that says ignore this, but it means that over time your registry gets bigger and bigger and bigger with more and more cruft in it, and at some point it's going to have a problem. It also means it takes longer to load your machine or to do anything because the system has to search through all that stuff before it can get to what you do.
Yeah.
However, what Revo does is actually remove the pieces. You know, you're at that age. It removes the pieces and parts from the registry entirely. Exactly. It removes pieces and parts from the registry completely so that the registry stays smaller. The cruft is actually gone. And it means that the system is going to be able to find what you need to do faster because the registry is smaller.
Yeah.
I've
just runs a keeper
load. Faithfully.
Yeah.
For a long time since you guys suggested, and I love it.
Good.
Yeah,
that's what I like to hear.
Yeah, I recommended that, I think, at least 5-6 years ago.
Yeah.
At least.
Yep. It's an awesome program, and... you know, as long as you use the moderate setting and not the higher one or the lower one, which does exactly what Windows does,
right,
you're golden.
All right, excellent. Thanks so much.
Thank you.
We're going to take a quick break. It's 40 minutes after the hour, and you're listening to the longest-running computer show in the known universe. If you haven't called in, you still can. 966-5299 is the local number, 1-800-790-0415. And we'll be back with a whole lot more of the longest-running computer show in the known universe. It's Soundbites on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Before you call into our show, please make note of the following rules. 1. Turn your radio down. 2. Turn your radio down lower. 3. Remember, nobody has invented a good-sounding speakerphone yet. Don't use them. 4. Make sure you have a point. It makes for a more interesting show. 5. Calling does not guarantee you'll get on the air. No whining. 6. If you do get on the air, please do not tell the host what you just told the screener. We don't care. And 7. Is that radio turned down yet? We hope this will make for a more enjoyable program, and we thank you for your time.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 45 minutes after the hour, we are Soundbites. I should probably read another news item. You can give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299.
We've been quite busy with the phones today.
We have. Toll-free, 1-800-790-0415. Oh.
No, we did him.
No, we did Mark from Greece. We have nobody in the line, right? Right.
So that was flung back to him, not flung to you.
Right.
It landed right in the middle, which way it was going.
An apparently broad outage rocked Gmail and a raft of other Google web applications Friday afternoon, leading many affected users to flood Twitter and other social media sites and discussion forums with complaints. Google acknowledged the Gmail problem at around 2:10 p.m. Eastern Time on its app status site and declared it solved it around 3:20. The company later reported on the app status at around 3 p.m. that more than 10 other services were having problems, including Calendar, Talk, Drive, Docs, Sites, Groups, Voice, and Google Plus Hangouts. The outages of most of these applications were declared fixed by 3:25 p.m., with the exception of Hangouts, which was cleared up about 3:50 p.m. The problem with Voice took much longer. As for comment about the cause and scope of the outage, the Google Public Relations team said via email to check the app status site for information. Interesting watching my Twitter feed explode with people frustrated with their Gmail when their Gmail is down. I guess we're still a long way from email's demise, wrote Forrester research analyst TJ Kite on his Twitter account. Gmail is used both by individuals for personal communications, by businesses for their employees, as part of the Google Apps email and collaboration suite. Meanwhile, TechCrunch reported the bizarre situation of a man who since last night has been receiving a deluge of emails because of a link that appears when people search for Gmail on Google. That's right, people search for Gmail on Google. Such a search query delivers as its first result, as expected, a link for Gmail, but a sublink that appears below it, labeled email, triggers when clicked upon a Gmail message interface already addressed to this guy's Hotmail account. It's not clear whether that issue was related to the outages on Friday afternoon, since the man, David Peck, told TechCrunch that the issue started on Thursday evening. So, how lonely were you without your Google services? Give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299, toll-free, 1-800-790-0415.
Yeah, a lot of people don't.
Whoever just called and hung up, call again.
A lot of people don't understand the difference between the address bar, where you type an address, and the search bar, where you type a search. And so most of the browsers these days just have a unified bar.
Right.
So you type Gmail, it figures you probably meant to go to gmail.com,
right,
and just goes there.
Right.
So I remember reading that years ago, yahoo.com was one of the most popular search phrases on Google, because people go to the Google search bar and type yahoo.com,
yep,
instead of going to the address bar and typing the address.
Yep. I was working yesterday, and luckily I was on my Chromebook, which is set for offline mode, so it complained that it couldn't get to Google Docs. But it kept on working just fine, so I was able to work for several hours before it said, oh, we're back. And indeed, we were back. So I was very grateful to have my Chromebook and be working on that. So it switched seamlessly from offline to from online to offline and back to online again. So that was also very nice.
Everyone always goes nuts when something goes wrong. Is it just me or is it out for you too? And so you post to Twitter and Facebook or, you know, Instagram or whatever and overwhelm the system even more, trying to ask if the system is overwhelmed.
Right. I just went to the Google Apps page. Google has a page where you can see the status of its apps, and they call it the Apps Status Dashboard. So you can see all of that stuff. And if you want to see it, Steve can put a link up, and it'll tell you.
Shouldn't there have been an outage? Oh, this is yesterday. I thought this was today.
Yeah,
that's
so
the
yesterday.
Yellow bit is all yesterday.
Yeah.
So the admin console and Postini didn't go down.
Good to know.
What if this page goes down? So this was their all their apps, but not their main website.
Well, isn't right? Google is not on there.
Yeah, Google.
Right. This is strictly for the apps.
Yeah, Google Search is not listed as one of the things that went down.
Right. But yeah.
But Hangouts is having a problem yesterday. Oh, that was down yesterday too. That's yesterday. Stop. Why isn't there a today in there?
Current status.
Right. But why isn't there a today at the end of this column?
Because it's here.
I know. Well, yeah, but I'm...
This is Google.
See,
they don't have to make sense.
The timeline goes across, so why isn't the last column today?
I understand where
the last
you're coming
column
from.
Is yesterday.
The last column is yesterday. The first column is today. It's time wibbly-wobbly, timey-wimey. That's the sort of thing it is. So, it's a... it's a dashboard that Google puts out so people know how things are going. And you're right. What if that goes down? My assumption it's on an entirely different set of servers from everything else. And Steve's going to put up a link to that on the forums. It's pretty interesting the range of stuff that Google actually has that we don't think about. And it's nice to know whether it's up, down, left, right, whatever it happens.
Yeah, no. But it's amazing, you know, how much all of us right here have started to depend on Google so much.
Yep.
You know, I mean, like I say, reminders and everything. The calendar is the biggest thing for me.
Yep.
That has saved my butt more times.
And we have switched so many people over to Google Calendar that used to run their own calendar server or tried to use one of the other, you know, commercial calendar servers. It's just easiest to use Google now.
Yeah.
Although, you used to get 100 free email accounts on Google Apps.
Right.
And then it was 10, and now it's 0. So you can get free personal mail, but if you want your own domain, that's not free anymore.
Right. If you put your domain over, it costs you money now. Not a lot. It's still not terribly expensive.
Yeah, about $3 per user per month, something like that.
Yeah, but just the calendar function for us, you know, as far as
Yeah, you just make one account for calendar, yeah.
Yeah, and tie them together. So for like Kathy and I, you know, keeping track of appointments and everything else, it's just so much easier.
You can have your own calendar and show it on your calendar.
Right.
Someone else's calendar.
Yeah, that's what I do. I also do that with my daughter to tie into my grandson's schedule as far as soccer and track meets and all that other type of stuff, too. I could hit one button over on the left-hand side, and it'll add her calendar stuff into mine.
Yep.
So I can see it, but I can also shut it off.
And you can add, I have the movie calendar, see what's opening.
Mm-hmm.
So I know what I'm missing because I'm not going to it. I've got the Soundbites calendar on my calendar so I can see when meetings are.
Mm-hmm.
Then I've got my phone calendar. I told you about this. I've got an app called CallTrack, and it records to my phone calendar every call I make or receive.
Hmm.
So I can go back and somebody says, well, blah, 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 blah. And I can say, well, you know, we talked on this date or I tried to call you on that date or whatever happens.
So we've done that. People get mad at us. Nobody ever called me. Okay, well, here's my log. On January 13th at 4 p.m., we called and talked about this. Oh, I don't remember that. Well, we did call.
And we actually had a conversation, and this is it.
But that one guy the other day, it was so funny, he said, pretend we didn't talk, and explain it all to me again.
That's nice. That's good.
Okay. All right. I acknowledge that we did talk about this before, but that's pretend creative. We didn't and explain it all to me again.
Right. It's very creative. Very nice. Yeah, I'll tell you, that call track is pretty neat. I like it. It works. It's an Android app, and you create a special Google Calendar for it, and I cleverly called mine phone. But
yeah,
that's
most
the way that works.
Most phones will keep your call log for you, but tying it into your calendar and who you talk to and how long is a really neat idea.
Yeah, it really is. All right, that's it. We're done for another week. I'm going home. The heck with it. The heck with you guys. You're on your own for another 6.5 days and a few more hours after that. I want to thank everybody who called in. There were quite a number of you this week, and I want to apologize to everybody to whom we did not get. Yeah, call earlier and more often. We'll be back next week at noon, as we always are. Don't go away, of course, because George is coming in to play the best German music you will hear all week. And Michael Oden is here to keep him on the straight and narrow, assuming that's even doable. And we'll be back next week with a whole lot more of the longest-running computer show in the known universe. It's 55 minutes after the hour. It's Soundbites on member-supported Jazz 90.1.